Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, for the first hour, the views of John Longnecker. Oh, we've had John with us before. And hi, John. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Doing just great. So why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and why you feel as strongly as you do.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm who I am because I always was a people person. And, you know, you're a physician, doctor. And in the early 70s, I was intrigued so much by this new career called pre-hospital care that I just had to get in on it. And as a consequence, I became one of the first paramedics in Los Angeles EMS. And I did EMS for about 10 years. And I promoted, I sat on two EMS committees, and I just had a blast. But I got my share of trauma calls. And in Los Angeles, I worked parts of South Central LA, and we had our share of gunshot wounds. And at the time, I noticed that it was a pretty horrific proposition. But I asked myself, where are all the self-defense shootings? And I knew that it really wasn't going to be anytime soon that I'd have that question answered, but it was answered. And I came to learn that as soon as the FBI started compiling a lot of the information that was handed in by law enforcement all across the country, I came to understand where those self-defense shootings really were. They were in extremely few numbers. The idea is that the FBI is able to determine that there are 29,000 shooting deaths in this country every year, about 29,550. But the self-defense shootings were almost non-existent, minuscule by comparison. But the FBI did report, as a companion figure, that individuals, citizens in this country, use their gun to de-escalate a crime in progress, perhaps their own murder, 2.5 million times a year. And when I became aware of this, I started doing some more digging, and I kind of got the hunch that I'd been lied to. And not by the FBI, but by the anti-gun movement. And when the anti-gun movement began to get my attention, I thought, well, gee, you know, that might be a good idea, but I smell a rat. There's just something that's not in agreement with my real-life experience. And I'd see a lot of shootings, and I'd see a lot of crime on crime, and I'd see some suicide. I'd see a few accidents, very few. But my partners and I came to understand that you couldn't find very many self-defense. So when I did my research, we found that out of those 2.5 million shootings, or 2.5 million de-escalations every year, that the American citizen who wields the gun and may have to draw down can de-escalate the situation without even firing the weapon. Because the customer that he has to face either bolts or stays for the police. And the situation is de-escalated into a happy ending where the individual has defended himself and the perpetrator is not wounded in the process.
And, of course, we see exactly the opposite in our nation's capital, where they have the strongest gun laws in the world and also the highest murder rate and shooting rate. And, of course, guns actually prevent, you know, crime and prevent murder. If taking guns away from people really worked, then why is Washington, D.C. one of the murder capitals of the world?
Well,
nobody ever brings those
is.
Facts out.
You know, Doctor, there's something that we can talk about that we didn't talk about in our previous episode.
All right, you hang on here because we're going to have to go to a break.
Sure.
But our guest is John Longnecker, and we're talking about your right to keep arms. Go right ahead, John.
Now, Doctor, you know about cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
Right.
It was developed at Johns Hopkins University in 1960, and it was brought to the public around 1977. And it spent its whole life for the first 17 years in the clinical setting, and a lot of people didn't learn of it until people like the American Heart Association tapped me on the shoulder when I was a chief at the time. And they contacted all sorts of paramedic chiefs across the country, and they said, will you do something for us? Will you please come to this particular auditorium where we've assembled doctors and lawyers, and please say something that only a paramedic in the field can enunciate based on your perspective? And that was this. The physicians and the attorneys who were in attendance asked one important question. You want us to get behind the movement to teach citizens CPR, Chief. But why don't we just let the professionals like you handle it? And I said, well, here's something that you might like to know, doctor or counselor. In the clinical setting, if you're on the standard acute general acute care hospital floor, if you're in an intensive care unit, your CPR crash cart is probably 10 paces away. It's one push button away. But in the field, and you know that brain death begins in 4 minutes, if a patient stops breathing and their pump stops pumping, they'll suffer brain death in 4 minutes. But you know, ladies and gentlemen, for us in the field, the reason you don't want to let the professionals handle it to the exclusion of the citizen is because we cannot always arrive with a life-saving response time of under 3 minutes. And all of a sudden, the light bulbs went on. They had been used to the perspective of the clinical setting, which means that their crash cart is only down the hall. And they can get on top of the patient immediately, which is their purpose in placing the patient in the intensive care unit to begin with. But in the field, we can't always be there. The solution of the American Heart Association was to train citizens. Now, here's the big corollary, what I call the CPR corollary, between CPR and CCW, which is concealed carry of your handgun. Sometimes it's CHP, CHL, CCW, depending on the state. The idea is that when you come to facing grave danger alone, there is an absolute identity of values between citizen CPR and citizen concealed carry. And that is these. One, the situation is obviously grave. If you have a grave danger situation...
Hold that thought there, John. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Longdecker, who for many years, of course, was an emergency medical technician and certainly was with the ambulances when they went out. And certainly if somebody had stopped breathing, why, they'd give them CPR. Breathe for them, pump their heart until they could get into the hospital, and hopefully either by the heart would start up by itself, or get them into a hospital setting where they could use a certain stimulation or medications or other things. But of course, John is making the analogy between the fact that certainly you can't wait, you know, for to get a patient to the hospital to start cardiac resuscitation. You've got to be able to do it in the clinical setting, in the home, on the street corner, and you're far better off if somebody else has actually started CPR prior to the time the ambulance arrives, because the ambulance can't necessarily be there within 4 minutes. And 4 minutes after you collapse, why, you begin to undergo brain death. So there was a nationwide effort to train people in CPR so that we could sustain life until the ambulance arrived, and then the professionals could be there, and then the professionals could get the patient to the hospital. But if you waited until the ambulance got there, you were going to lose an awful lot of people. And so John is then, of course, carrying over the analogy to the idea that you can't always depend upon the police being there to help you, to protect you. And 2.5 million times every year, American citizens use their own weapons, very seldom have to shoot anybody, but use their own weapons to protect themselves from criminal attacks. So pick up the story there, John, because I think it's an excellent analogy.
Thank you, Doctor. The idea is that where it compares further is that when you're facing grave danger, you need to understand as a layperson, you and I understand this as professionals, but the layperson needs to understand that when you face grave danger, you can't wait. You have to make a decision, or the consequences are, of course, fatal. The corollary is this. In the CPR cardiac arrest situation, or in the criminal grave danger situation, you or your patient is facing grave danger. Two, you're without first responders. You're alone, and the only thing you have is your training and your two hands. If you look at the situation further, the layperson says, gee, I've been trained, and I have the sufficient authority to act. In a case of citizen CPR, you can act without a license. You can act without having to get permission. You can act while there's still time to save the patient's life. And in each case, of course, seconds count. In each case, failure to act means results which are both heartbreaking and irrevocable. Now, this is quite a corollary, because a lot of people used to say, well, what did people do before we had definitive mobile intensive care units? What did we do before we had CPR? Well, we lost people. They died. The entire purpose of the pre-hospital care program was to avoid premature death due to acute injury and illness. People used to arrive in hearses in small towns and would arrive dead because they weren't treated for their airway management or their bleeding, or they were not triaged properly. And so in the 60s, along with some federal funding and a couple of other activists, the idea of pre-hospital care developed. And you wouldn't believe how it was opposed. But CCW is opposed also, and it is equally in the public interest. The big secret, as you've said, Doctor, with where illusion prevails instead of reality, is that our personal independence to meet and manage violent crime in this country is being obfuscated. Our sovereign authority as an individual to act in self-defense with up to lethal force when we are alone without first responders is being obfuscated and punished. And, of course, there's always the possibility of being sued by persons who may survive in case you have to use that lethal force to protect yourself. And you may also, of course, come to the aid of another. This is being opposed, actively opposed, and it goes against the public interest of the United States.
Well, I certainly agree, and there are people who want to disarm the public, and some of them, I'm sure, are people who haven't thought this thing through. They've accepted these slogans, you know, guns kill people. Or, you know, if we just took the guns away, we could save the lives of all these children who are killed by guns. And certainly, how many, look at all the children killed by guns. Take the guns away from the people and the children will be alive. But
Yeah. These
are certainly heart-wrenching stories, and everybody's death is a tragedy. But, I mean, we would lose so many people, you know, if we did not have an armed population. And, of course, the most important thing is we have, different than any other country in the world, a Bill of Rights. And that means that people have the right to keep and bear arms, because the founding fathers of America feared that there were those people who wanted to take away our freedom, and there really are. There are people who want a dictatorship in America. There have always been people who wanted a dictatorship in America. There are people who crave for power over other people's lives, and some of those people are very, very busy now trying to repeal the Second Amendment of the Constitution, not by the legal way, not by the amendment process, but by passing legislation, illegal legislation,
right,
to disarm the public as a prelude to the establishment of a dictatorship in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Go ahead, John.
Well, you just led me into what I was going to address at this point. You know, one of the things that we have in this country is an abuse of due process. The founding fathers, when they first won the battle against the Crown of England, and they prevailed on our behalf on the war for independence, they were defeating, basically, abuse of due process. And they knew it would recur in the future. So they wrote the words of art that said, you can't abuse the law, and it's specifically forbidden, because the citizen is supreme authority. Now, we know that that's what they meant, because that's what they just defeated. was the abuse of due process. And from all their writings and their debates, it's quite clear that they had just had it up to here, with the goalposts being moved constantly so that the law was nothing but an abuse and an ambiguity. So they said the law says the citizen is supreme authority. When they wrote the Second Amendment, they gave teeth to that citizen authority by saying to the person, you are in supreme authority and you will have lethal force to back that authority. Now, Doctor, I don't believe that the demise of the United States is going to come with some shootouts with U.S. troops. I think that the demise of the United States will come with abuses of due process that are backed by force and which are witnessed by the targets and the impartial who stand by in ignorance and do nothing for their neighbor because they don't know. I think that's what we're going to be battling in the future.
Well, you know, as you watch some of these television programs, Law and Order, or other programs where they have the law enforcement people, and you'll find very often the detectives will use unnecessary force, illegal force. They'll grab the people, they'll hit their heads against the wall. You've got to tell me where so-and-so is hidden. You know, we're going to beat this out of you. And many times they do it, or choke it out of them. And since we identify with those detectives, why, we somehow think that this is perfectly acceptable. But once we allow law enforcement to step over the line, why, nobody's life is safe. And you know, this is done many times with people who are entirely innocent. These are the techniques that you use in a dictatorship. These are not techniques that you would ordinarily use in a free society. How often do we see those the portrayal of the SWAT team coming in? They don't bother to present a warrant. They simply break down the door. They're there with their, you know, they look like soldiers. They've got on their armor. They've got on their helmets. Many times they have on their face masks to conceal themselves and who they are, because they're ashamed of what they're doing, because they don't want to be able to point out to them as the source of police brutality. And they simply go into somebody's home, whether the people are guilty or not. I mean, they're supposed to knock at the door with a warrant. They very, very seldom do that today. They simply break in because we're from the police and we're here to protect you, or something or other.
Well, the police can't protect us. You know, their job is to protect the public, but they have no duty in any of the 50 states, with one exception, to protect individuals. And that one exception is if you are in psychiatric or criminal incarceration. That's pretty much it. Maybe a court order for a particular individual, but that does not last forever. The idea is that police do not have a duty to protect individuals. Now, this can be stunning to the head of a household who wants to learn more about how they protect their homes. And it occurred to me, you know, I have a column called Good for the Country, and it's in syndication, and it's got a pretty warm reception, because I'm able to make a very good connection between the Bill of Rights and original intent and how we run our homes today in 2007, and how our children are going to run up their homes tomorrow. And this year I decided to take it to the next level, and I formed a 501c3 tax-exempt nonprofit called goodforthecountry.org. And that's on the web, is goodforthecountry.org. And you see the column, goodforthecountry.com, but the Patriotic Philanthropy website is goodforthecountry.org. And our mission is to tackle these abuses of due process through education in the public interest. We're producing videos, multimedia, podcasts to bring the liberty message, because you never know who may be hearing the liberty message for the very first time.
And of course, the difficulty is that so often, and we find this recently, when there were three police officers broke into an elderly lady's home, but they had the wrong home. And they're there with their guns drawn. They break down the door, and she's got a gun. And she sees three of them. She doesn't know they're from the police. And so they gun her down. I don't know how many shots they fired into this little old lady. And then they find out why they got the wrong home. The informant had given them the wrong information. Sorry, lady, we killed you. But this happens not that infrequently. Well, John, you go right ahead.
The Good for the Country Foundation has the mission of educating in the public interest where are abuses of due process.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Trying to get information out of the importance of people having the right to carry concealed weapons. This is one of the fundamental rights of our country, and according to our Constitution, local governments does not have the right to take it away. Now, people like to believe that we are a free country, and yet, here in the United States today, there are 7 million people in prison, probation, or parole. 7 million people. That's far more than they have in communist China today. Certainly, here in the United States, there are 2 million people in prison. What does that suggest to you? Have we lost our way? Of course, a lot of the people are in prison because, of course, they smoke marijuana. Now, I don't agree with smoking marijuana or using drugs, but I don't believe that if we can have a government that has the right to put so many people away, especially when the Central Intelligence Agency, in my estimation, is one of the biggest purveyors of drugs in the world. And if you doubt that, you need to get a couple of the books we carry, like Drugging America, Defrauding America, and certainly our four-tape set, Is There Really a War on Drugs? And you find out that there really is not. In fact, the General Accounting Office did an analysis of the CIA, that or maybe it was an internal investigation, but I've got that report, and they agreed that the CIA and people within the CIA were involved in the drug smuggling. How many of them ever went to prison? And the answer is none of them did. So one of our people we had interviewed, a man named Gary Webb, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from the San Jose Mercury, writing about the involvement of people with the CIA with the drugs and Iran-Contra and CIA involvement in drug smuggling. And eventually he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make absolutely certain he was dead. And, you know, go right ahead, John. Don't get me started.
No. He shot himself in the head twice.
Right. His name was Gary Webb, and it's a very famous story. We'd actually interviewed Gary a number of times.
Americans need to understand their sovereign authority, because when they come to realize that a lot of individuals, and I'm not against the United States government, I'll tell you why. I'm an elected official myself, and the idea is that you run into people who don't have a moral compass, and they become self-dealing when they get into office, and they catch a disease they call Potomac fever. And the Potomac fever, you know, makes them believe that they're entitled to things and that they're immune to things and thus and so. And they start acting so independently that they begin to deter from their oath of office. And fortunately, they're in small numbers. It's like a police department that has a few bad cops. It's not the entire police department. Well, sometimes it is. But in most of the cases, it's not. And this gives us a lot of hope for the kind of people we can send to Sacramento or Washington or Austin or any place in this country. And it's going to be very hard to determine if they're sincere and if they can work without supervision and play well with others and that sort of thing. But it can be done. And it takes a little civic involvement. It takes a little education, and most important, Americans need to understand original intent, personal authority, and liberty. And once they understand the freedom they have, they'll be just a little frightened in the very beginning because it involves a responsibility, but it is wonderful to live in a free country.
And it is, and that if we lose our freedom, of course, life will come to have very little meaning. Most Americans don't appreciate freedom because they never lived without it or never even contemplated living without it. And yet I believe that there's a very real threat to freedom today, don't you?
Yes, I do. It comes not only from national interests, but international interests. You know, a couple of Congress people are loyal to the Constitution of the United States, and they've turned in reports of how other countries can break through and get into the credit histories and personal information through diplomatic means. And they can begin to raid and steal individual Americans' identities.
And I think there's a great deal to be concerned about. In fact, why would we think if people are immoral, the people who are in government wouldn't be immoral? If people would steal on the outside, why wouldn't they steal on the inside? You can steal far more when you're working for government than you can on the outside. After all, Lyndon Johnson had to borrow money to get back to Washington, D.C. when he was a congressman. And when he left Washington, D.C. on a congressman and senator's salary and president's salary, he was one of the richest men in Texas. Be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Longnecker. John, go right ahead and pick up your thoughts.
Well, let's see now. The Good for the Country Foundation is looking at various issues that are adverse to the United States. Now, I want to say something about school shootings. School shootings are one of the better examples of how citizen authority is obfuscated and punished. And what they do is they take adults in a state such as Virginia, which is a right to carry state, and they say, you know something, you may have a right or an authorization to carry that gun in the parking lot at the 99-cent store, but not here. You're going to have to check your rights at the admissions office. Now, I don't know if they're going to litigate, but one of the things that really irked me last week was when a committee at Virginia Tech said that they have the right to determine what goes on their campus. And I said, you know something? I just published something the other day that was uttered by Kofi Annan. Well, he was UN Secretary General at the United Nations, and he said this. When he's talking about the Lebanese state, he said, August 11th, 2006, he said, the Lebanese state, like any other sovereign state, must have a monopoly on the use of force in its own territory. And I compared the two quotes between Virginia Tech and former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. I said, you know something? Both of these are birds of a feather. They have no clue as to who they really work for. When it comes to students, these individuals are probably adults, unless they're, you know, geniuses. The people that they serve are probably registered voters. They're probably already vetted by an authority that get conducted a background check. And they're probably trained, much better than the staff, in how to use their weapon, when not to draw, when to draw, in the circumstances. Because it's very, very clearly defined, you don't shoot unless you're facing grave danger and you have no alternative. That's a pretty good opinion. And let's remember that when seconds count, the police are moments away. And so I wrote a piece about the victim disarmament zones, and I pointed out that there might be room for litigation in the bullpen because the school does not have the authority to do what it does. And this could be very, very humiliating. Some campuses have decided maybe we ought to let them carry their guns.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's John Longnecker. We're talking about the Virginia Tech situation, where, of course, they disarmed all of the entire staff there. Nobody could carry a gun other than the police, and they were a long ways away. They were searching for this young man who'd already shot a couple of students. They thought he'd left the campus, so they left the campus looking for him. There was nobody there to protect the students. Had there been one student or one teacher with a gun, they might have saved dozens of lives there. But certainly every school in America is now a shooting gallery, and you can go in there and kill as many as you want because you know there's not going to be any armed force taken against you. And then, of course, all you have to do is shoot yourself. You have nothing to worry about. And what we have done is certainly endanger the life of every student in this entire country. Well, before we go on, I want John to get his websites out and talk a little bit about what he does, and then if you'd like to give us a call, if you agree or you disagree, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, but ladies and gentlemen, this is a very important issue. First of all, it's a constitutional issue. Do people have the right to simply nullify our Constitution because they disagree with it? Why don't they amend the Constitution? Well, of course, they know that they could not amend the Constitution because the people agree that we should have a right for keep and bear arms and defend ourselves. So there are people out there, authoritarian people, who believe that they know what's better for the rest of us, like the people in Washington, D.C., and they've created more crime and violence there than literally any other place in the in the nation, and certainly what they've done by disarming the people in Great Britain and in Canada and in Australia is to increase the incidence of gun crimes, because the criminals now know that the people will not be able to defend themselves. So, John, you go ahead, pick up the message there. Let's hear about what you're really trying to accomplish with your foundations, and then, of course, if people want to call in, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I agree with that concept of more guns, less crime. Not more guns, more crime. More guns, less crime. This has been worked out statistically. And the fact that people aren't being told this simply reflects the fact that our media is controlled by people who hate freedom, who have an agenda, and are using the power of the media to conceal the truth from the American people. Go right ahead, John.
Well, that's because liberty spoils their picnic. A lot of these people, they want power. They have money, but they want power. And the thing standing in the way is the American household. Now, here's something to think about. The average household can discuss how it's going to handle root canal, how it's going to handle traffic accident, how it's going to handle illness and injury. But how the American household will meet and survive criminal violence is the most neglected area of their household management. And this is because something very, very bad has happened in this country. And for the individual who asks me, John, you know, I understand more and more now how we should have a gun. I understand now the police have no duty to protect you. I understand now that the police cannot arrive with a life-saving response time of 3 minutes any more than the paramedics can. And so we must do this. I understand that I have the authority to use up to lethal force when in my apprehension I am in grave danger. And apprehension is not fear. It is belief. You don't even have to be afraid. You just have to believe that you're in grave danger. And you can come to the aid of another. And you add all this up, and one thing is still missing. And that is this. The question is, how does a gun law affect me if I don't own a gun? How do gun bans affect me, the non-gun owner? Well, that's very simple. Why don't you own a gun? Well, it's against the law. And I said, bingo. You have been so intimidated that you now fear the government of Washington, D.C., and its gun ban and its penalties more than you fear rape or murder. And you take the chances. You roll the dice when you go to the market or when you go to shopping or when you drive on the freeway. You have decided that you must choose between felony and funeral. And now adult students who now go to a campus and who may study law, or they may study United States history, are not told of their sovereign authority and how their authority trumps the authority of the public officials who serve us. And they have to choose between felony and funeral. And in the case of Cho and Virginia Tech, the university chose 32 of them. And they had no choice. They chose funeral. They, too, face expulsion or death. Now, they cannot carry their weapon. And why? The chief reason that the universities and the other colleges say is we do not want our students settling their disputes in anger. But you know, a trained gun owner does not respond in anger. A trained gun owner responds in purpose. And it is another lie that's perpetrated by the anti-gun movement. Well, no, I was right. The anti-liberty movement. Because it wants to discourage people, it wants to punish people, it wants to attack your resolve to protect yourself and your community. And this breeds dependency on agencies, and that's what's taking over this nation. Dependency.
All right, I agree with you totally. Let's get your websites out there, and then we'll go to a couple of callers we have.
All right.
My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. 8295 here in the Central Coast of California. So let's get those websites out. And
well, my regular column is goodforthecountry.com. It's a regular syndicated piece that appears on my website first before it's outletted to my various outlets. And the foundation is goodforthecountry.org. And it's a Good for the Country Foundation. It's a 501c3 tax-exempt corporation, so that your donation is tax-deductible. The idea is that we need to meet with education. All of these abuses, as they erode the authority and the resolve and the happiness that we have in liberty, and it ranges from parenting, zero-tolerance policies, to self-defense, to what you can own, where you can go, and one important thing that drives a lot of liberty nuts, is the idea that what you do, you have to show cause. Now this is another place where gun laws profoundly affect non-gun owners. That's what we stand for, is the civil authority that we have over the officials, and not the other way around.
Well, agreed. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question for our guest?
Well, a couple of comments, actually. First of all, if guns were outlawed, only the government would have guns. I think that's important for people to realize.
Right. Guns were outlawed. Only outlaws would have guns, but it's the same, Jim.
It's the same thing, Doctor.
Right.
Yeah, well, you have to realize it'll be the government. Who trusts the government?
Well, when the government comes to give you a hand, they say, I'm the government, and I'm here to help you.
Yeah, well, most anti-gun people don't trust the government.
All right, fine. Do you have another thought then, Mike?
Well, yeah. Back when you were talking about the right to carry a few minutes ago, it made me think, you know, there's a lot more good people in the world than there are bad people. And if all the good people were carrying guns, or even half of them, or even a quarter of them, all the bad people with guns would be thinking twice before they pulled theirs.
Amen to that. You're right.
That's exactly what is being hidden.
Yeah.
That is precisely. I say often, concealed carry and personal independence can easily impeach the need for these anti-crime, anti-violence policies, because they're frauds.
Now, the anti-gun people think, they get absolutely horrified at the idea of so many guns being out on the street and nobody knows who's got them.
That's not their problem. Believe me, it's not their problem.
We would have so much less of a problem of the shoot 'em up.
Yeah, of course.
If that were the case, it would be the complete opposite of what these people are afraid of.
Well, this is the big secret, Mike.
Yeah.
The big secret is that if you were given the chance, as people are in the right to carry states or the open carry states, if they were given the chance to be independent, none of the dire forecasts would ever happen.
Jack, what is happening in the states where the people have the right to keep and bear arms, to have concealed weapons? Hasn't the incidence of crime actually gone down in
I'll tell you where they've gone down. Some reports, and this is very positive, you don't see a drop in crime per se. And I said, that's probably correct. And one of the anti-gun people arguing with me says, well, then what difference does it make? And I said, well, here's the difference. The crime statistics that the police are summoned to are crimes where people did not defend themselves. The incidents where they did defend themselves are unreported.
Okay, fine. That's such a very valid point.
Of course it is, because a lot of times I have people who are within three blocks of me who have found people in their homes midday, and they had their weapon handy because, you know, you don't lock it up. That's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And fortunately, it's still legal, as long as the child doesn't get his hands on it. And they grabbed their weapon, and one of them had a pool in the backyard, and she swears that this guy leaped right over the pool and didn't get his feet wet. But he bolted and didn't stick around. And I said, did you report that to the sheriff? And she said, of course not. Why? what are they going to do? And I said, well, they need to understand what kind of reports are being turned in so that they can budget for next year's assets. It may be a very good idea for them to understand how many crimes were deterred so that they can, you know, bring in a greater number of police officers and cars and stuff in next year's budget. And she goes, what are they going to do? Have a 4 or 5 minute response time? If you add more cops on the street, does not improve your response time. Because you still have to process the request for aid, you still have to determine the assets, you still have to process the dispatch of the call, and they still have to travel. There goes your 3 minutes. Right then and there, you've just surrendered the superior force that you have that you could have used to de-escalate the situation. More cops in the area, she was right, will not improve the response time.
Anything else you want to say?
Well, the police just come along after the fact. We're there during the fact.
Well, that's my word exactly. You must have read my column.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, one last thing for John. The 501c3.
Yes, sir.
Drop it.
Drop it.
Yep.
Say why.
Well, you're a government organized entity. You have asked the government for permission to exist.
And of course,
I can continue in California as a nonprofit corporation. I can continue to operate nonprofit if I want to.
You're a corporation.
Absolutely.
You have asked the government for the.
I don't want to get off on that,
right.
Mike. Thanks very much. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan, because this is a theoretical concept that when you become a corporation, you become an extension of the state, and when you become a non-profit corporation, you're limited in what you can do, but you have both a profit and a non-profit, and I assume that with your non-profit, you will collect funds to get the information out.
Well, that's
out.
Also, profit also corporation, tax deductible for the owner.
Right, and because with your profit corporation, why, then you can go ahead and say what you want to say. So you have the advantage having both. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Ken, I do. In fact, on that last subject matter, perhaps the reason the church organizations in our country have failed to condemn the new Vietnam genocide police action may well be because they've become a cheerleader organization for the government by virtue of their 501c3 corporate status.
Well, but of course, in this instance, why, of course, John has both a profit and a non-profit corporation. So let's stick with the subject.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make that comment. Really.
Right.
Okay, John, I think it's incumbent upon people to explain how it is that municipal corporations, and I'm reading from Volume 20, Corpus Juris Secundum.
Okay. Now, what was the question, Jack?
Okay, well, let me just say this real quick. The United States government is a foreign corporation with respect to a state.
Okay, I don't really want to get off on that. I really want to stick with this thing of guns.
Here comes the question. All right.
Okay.
Relative to our rights, our unalienable natural rights, among which is life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, the natural right of self-defense, etc.
All right. Do you have a question?
Why would the NRA, upon repeated attempts, fail to respond to my question as to why they have failed to come out against the Nazi Gun Act of 1938 that was adopted word for word by the U.S. government, and this was in Guns and Ammo, May of 93.
Okay, fine. Hey, do you want anything at all about that, John?
Well, I don't know what the board was thinking. I really don't. It may have been a strategic move that may be very wise. It may be, I have no idea.
Well, I think that many times the NRA, the National Rifle Association, they seem to have compromised their traditions, and they seem to be going along with the government, and they are supporting a great deal of legislation that is terrible. And the one organization I really trust is Gun Owners of America. And I no longer belong to the NRA, because quite frankly, many times they go right along with the government.
Well, you know, this is one of the things that I had analyzed when I filed my tax-exempt application. The IRS is very keenly aware of the projects that we undertake. They have asked to look at the website. I said, please do. And they processed the application in 9 days. The idea was that they are fully apprised of how we operate in the public interest to educate people on their own sovereign authority. And they know darn good well that we may take some donations from people who need us to be tax exempt or they will have no interest. But the main idea is that I knew that there was a tremendous void in the political action of the sovereignty of the American household on 10 different fronts. And I was utterly convinced that I can do a better job.
All right, well, I'm glad that you're out there. I think that you have an excellent presentation and certainly using the analogy between cardiopulmonary resuscitation and the ability to defend yourself, you know, with a weapon, I think is a very valid comparison. I think something that people can see. You certainly can't wait until the EMS, the emergency medical technician, gets there, to try CPR, or it'll be too late. And you can't wait for the police to get there to defend you, because if the other people have a gun, you're going to be dead. You need to be able to defend yourself. That was why they gave us the right to keep and bear arms. Well, John, why don't you go ahead? You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, basically, I like all of the patriotic organizations that come under the heading of patriotic philanthropy. I believe that the patriotic philanthropy is going to be the vast reaction time voice of the people in self-rule and in defense of the nation. That's my viewpoint. I think patriotic philanthropy has the reflex, the response time that's going to be needed to bring messages out to people in the new medium. Now, with the internet, with talk radio, with DVDs, video, high definition, this and that, and podcasts, I've decided to take the good for the country column, which points to adversities, to our way of life, and take it to the next level on multimedia. And that's what the website is all about. Soon you'll be seeing videos that attack anti-gun laws with common sense and authority, such as police have no mandate to protect you, the police know you are the first line of defense, and most police officers are not foes of gun owners, but allies. Things that the American non-gun owner does not know. And we point to the illustration that these people have been sufficiently intimidated by a gun ban that they choose to fear their official public servants more than they do the criminals they may be more and more likely to encounter in a gun ban city. Things that need to be pointed out and driven home, because our secret is to make the connection between original intent the 1700s, and how you run your home in liberty in the new millennium. That's our mission.
Well, I think it's a very noble mission. I wish you well. I'd certainly, again, the websites are www.goodforthecountry.com, where you'll find the various columns that John writes, and then www.goodforthecountry.org, which is their website where you can donate if you'd like, and of course help them put together their multimedia programs. And then of course www.transferofwealth.com. What will they find there?
Transferofwealth.net is our book site, and that's particularly my own book that I've had on the market for the last 3 years, and it's not connected with the foundation. If anybody's interested in buying the book, they can go to any bookstore, or they can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and click in Transfer of Wealth.
All right, fine. It's a very well-done book. I want to thank you, John. It's always a pleasure. Always enjoy having you on our program. And I will certainly look forward to having you in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Dan.
Good night. God bless.
Take care.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest, John Longdecker, and he's certainly on the front lines of this battle. And, of course, it's very important, if you hope to remain free, to be work for this idea of the right of the people to keep and bear arms, and the restrictions placed on the excessive use of force by our military, which is actively being encouraged by those who would turn the police against the population and the population against the police. just as they're working together to, working very, very hard to get the various racial groups fighting against one another. So they want, of course, to create tremendous distrust between government, people, and the populace. We are all Americans. We either stand together or we will hang and lose our freedom separately. Let me just point out, we are having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area on the 28th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration out of being there with us. We're going to be serving lunch, so you're going to have reservations to come. That's Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and when you put in your reservation, we'll send you the map and tell you exactly how to get there and what the schedule is at the present time. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to begin to try to understand what's going on. Why are we going to war with Iran? It doesn't make any sense. Why does President Ahmadinejad say what he does? Where did the Iranian Revolutionary Guard come from? Well, of course, it was the oldest secret police of the Shah of Iran, which was trained by our CIA, which became the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And, of course, this whole radical Islamic movement, the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, all created by the Central Intelligence Agency to create the best enemy that money could buy. The documentation on that, of course, is many of my older newsletters, books like Dollars for Terror, certainly James Cooley's book, that you'll find referenced many, many times. These were books written long before the 9/11 attack. And then, of course, a book now we do carry called The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game, See No Evil by Robert Baer. And then, of course, getting our various pamphlets, our $4 911 pamphlets, excellent source of material. But go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters and read through them and begin to understand what's going on. And then, of course, you need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, because, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies, and they've been around for thousands of years, and they have a goal: to bring about a new world order and a new world religion. And you really need to understand the spiritual component behind what's going on. You need, of course, to read my book or watch my DVD, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to see our talk on, it's a DVD on, The Forbidden Secret, and the syllabus goes with that. You need to get our 4-tape or 4-CD set on the secret behind the secret. You need to get our 4D a tape or 4-CD set, The Satanic Crimes, and there's a book that can go with that, a couple of them. One of them is called Program to Kill, the other is Satanic Crimes. You need to get the book, The Medusa File, going into the background of the close relationship between the CIA and the Nazi movement, and how, of course, the CIA and MI6 at the end of the Second World War helped the Nazis, 10,000 of them, to escape to South America, and brought many of the Nazi scientists here to America under something known as Operation Paperclip to continue their macabre experiments. And we have a 4-tape set and several interviews with the author of the book's Secret Agenda, which was carefully suppressed, telling about Operation Paperclip, the program to bring the Nazi scientists to America. How did we finance Adolf Hitler before the war? Well, that was, of course, the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. You need, of course, to get our books on that subject. You need, of course, to get my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, the DVD, and, of course, the syllabus to find out how we financed Adolf during the Second World War while our boys were dying on the beaches of Normandy. Pray for America and pray for revival. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And, well, for this hour, we're going to have with us a good friend, Ralph Epperson. And Ralph's been at this battle for many years, almost as long as I have. He's written a number of excellent books of The Hidden Hand, of The New World Order, Masonry, The Plot Against Christianity. And this hour, we're going to be talking about something that Ralph has put together a DVD on, and I don't know whether I agree with him or not. I'm going to let him put out his position, because, of course, it's the idea that the only nuclear weapons in the world are really American nuclear weapons. Now, that comes as sort of a surprise. You know, we're told that, of course, Pakistan and India and China and Russia all have nuclear weapons, and certainly North Korea has them, and Iran is working to build nuclear weapons. But I can remember many, many years ago when Robert Welch said that, you know, the Russians did not have any nuclear weapons, that it was all a charade, that all of this is simply to frighten us to death so that we will give more power to our own government to protect us against the wicked communists who have these weapons and might use them against us at any time. And I was always skeptical, but I always remember what he said, and so I'm going to let Ralph just go ahead and present his position. I don't know whether I will support it or whether I will not, but I think that you have a right to hear it. I'm anxious to hear it myself. So without further ado, Ralph Epperson, my good friend, go right ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan. First of all, let me say this. For background information for your listeners, I've been studying this conspiracy for over 40 years. I started in 1962. I've read nearly 1,000 titles on this subject, and I am 100% unalterably convinced that there is indeed a massive conspiracy at work in this world, and I've written 4 books on the subject and put out videos by probably 50, 60 hours of videos, and also booklets of 1,300 or 1,400 pages. So I have been writing and doing what I can to expose the evidence that this conspiracy is real. I've read on both sides of this subject, and I've toured the country. I've done hundreds of talk shows. I do seminars and lectures whenever I can that are invited. So I believe I know what I'm talking about. And I know this is very controversial and certainly contrary to anything else everyone is saying. And I know that I'm the only one saying this, as far as I know, so far. And I'm hoping that people will listen to me and become convinced and then do what they can to stop this enormous fraud. Because I am going to try to convince your listeners. I only have an hour, and with minus commercials and so it's going to be difficult, but I'll do the best I can to get people started on the process of learning that there are no nuclear weapons anywhere in the world except in the United States, period. End of report. All other claims are false and bogus, and I'm going to try to prove that.
All right, you go right ahead, Ralph. I'm listening all ears, and I know our listeners are as well. Go ahead.
Let me say this, Dr. Stan. I'm going to ask you and all your listeners to join me on a jury. Now, you've heard the prosecution for years, as long as you've been alive, that all sorts of, like you just pointed out, various nations have nuclear weapons, and that we believe that, there's a threat of nuclear war at any time one of these tyrants determined to nuke us. And I'm going to show you that it's all bogus, and that no other nation has them. And I'm going to ask everyone to listen to me and try to be open. I know that's going to be difficult because this is contrary to everything we've been taught. And if you'll listen to me and then watch my 3-hour video, DVD, I think I'll convince you.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Ralph, go ahead.
Okay, now, we are on a jury, and that means you've got to hear all of the defense. That means let me present my evidence. Now, I can't do it all in 1 hour. It's a three-hour DVD, and it's going to... I've documented it. It's hundreds of, probably nearly 1,000, if not more, slides, all of which will document my case. We're going to read the documentation that I'm right, and that this is stuff that I've accumulated over 30 some years. I started questioning this back in 1973, and so I've been saving articles and books and magazines, et cetera, to document my case. Now, let me point out to you that I have no confidential sources, no government agencies leaking information to me, no Russian scientists revealing things to me, nothing. I've used material that anyone can verify by going to the library or going to a newspaper or going to a magazine, and you can read the same things I've read to reach this conclusion. We have been told this information step by step, and I've been accumulating it. In fact, there's probably another 3 hours I could have put in this DVD, and I thought I better try to make it reasonable so that people don't get too convinced, too bored by it. Now, let me explain this. If you want to watch this DVD, it's available on the Internet right now, free, no cost. And all you got to do is go to Google and then go to Google Video and type in no nukes but U.S. nukes. And you will be able to watch this on your own PC or laptop, wherever you, whatever machine, you know, computer you've got. And you can watch it free. And in fact, if you want to download, make your own copy, you're free to do that as well. I sell the thing for $10 plus two for postage, but I'm giving them away. In fact, I've been going on the University of Arizona campus here in Tucson and handing them out free, kind of get the college students to be aware that we're being conned. Now, I cannot convince anyone in 1 hour of what we've all been taught for 30, 40, 50 years, however long we've been. In fact, the Cold War started in 1945 with the threat of nuclear war. So I can't convince you in 1 hour that 60-some years of government lies are wrong, but I can only start the process. And if you'll stick with me and go beyond the 1 hour we've got tonight with Dr. Stan, and go to Google Video, or write to me, or call me, and I'll get you a free copy. I'll send it to you if you'll pay the postage for it. I'll send you a copy. You can watch this yourself and see my documentation, because it is ample, I believe, to convince you. If you're open. Now, if you're going to believe, well, if I don't believe you, I don't care what you say, I can't convince you. Now, I have said that I've been...
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Ralph, and we'll go... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ralph simply says that he's going to have difficulty convincing us that everything we've always believed is false. You know, in just simply 1 hour, it would take at least 3 hours. But however, the video is free up there on the Internet. Let's get started there. You go ahead and start developing the idea, because you're absolutely right. Everything we know is what we're told by the controlled media. They shape our reality. They give us our ideas. They form our tastes. They know exactly how we're going to respond. So, well, after all, we have to have an enemy. And, of course, the enemy can be a nuclear bomb that could destroy us at any time. And so we are told over and over again, and how many times have we seen that picture of the mushroom cloud, that we're in danger of nuclear annihilation. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Rob.
Okay, now, let's start with this, Dr. Stan. I'm going to start with Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton is probably my greatest evidence that I'm right. President Bill Clinton, in 1992, on the night of July the 16th, 1992, Bill Clinton spoke to the American people on live national television, and when he was accepting the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States. And he reprinted that speech of his in his book entitled Putting People First, published in 1992. He co-authored it with Al Gore, because it was the book that we were all supposed to read to learn what these men had, you know, were offering us as the candidates for the presidency. And if you go to page 217 of that book, you will find the complete transcript of that speech he delivered live on national television, with every network stopped and covering it live. And I'm going to then go to page 231, and I want to read you. I know I've got to, sometimes we're going to have to read things, but I've got to read this to you, because this is the the beginning of the evidence that I'm right. He said, quote, Bill Clinton, 1992, as a teenager, I heard John Kennedy's summons to citizenship. And then, as a student at Georgetown University, I heard that call clarified by a professor I had named Carol Quigley, end quote. Now, everyone knows who John Kennedy is. That was the President of the United States. And there's been a picture released of Bill Clinton shaking the hand of John Kennedy in the summer of 1963 in the White House, actually in the Rose Garden outside the White House. It's an outside picture. And Bill Clinton was in Washington, D.C. because of Boys Nation, I think that's what it's called, where various delegates from the state are selected to go to Washington. I guess they have a conference and a meeting, and they propose legislation, and whatever. It's all about learning about government. So Bill Clinton met John Kennedy, and apparently he got impressed by Kennedy to get started into politics. But only a very few people know who Dr. Carol Quigley was. Now, in 1992, I knew way before, because I read the book that we're going to talk about here back in the 70s, after it was published in 1966. Because Bill Clinton, let me lay a little foundation work. Bill Clinton graduated from Hot Springs High School in Arkansas in 1964, and he went from 64 to 68 to Georgetown University as an undergraduate, and then, you know, as a student, and he graduated in 1968. Now, he talked about Dr. Carol Quigley, that was the professor that got him into politics. And during the time that Bill Clinton was there, Dr. Quigley wrote a book entitled Tragedy and Hope. It was published in 1966 by Macmillan and Company, which is a major publisher back east in New York. And so his book was a major book published. It's something like 1,300 pages long, very boring reading, and I read the whole thing back in the 70s. Now, the Dr. Quigley has the proper credentials. He got his Ph.D. From Harvard University, taught at Harvard and at Princeton, and then went to Georgetown, and that's where he met Bill Clinton sometime between 64 and 68. But we know that Bill Clinton had to read Tragedy and Hope because it was required reading for his classes, for Quigley's classes. Now, that means that we can read the very same book that we know that Bill Clinton had to read, Tragedy and Hope. And I did not hear Bill Clinton say this on television, but I must have gotten a dozen phone calls within minutes of that speech when people called me and said, did you hear what Bill Clinton said? And I said, no. And I said, so I found it. I got it on tape. It's on my DVD. I'll show you the picture of Bill Clinton delivering this statement. Now, let's now read what Bill Clinton learned from Dr. Carol Quigley from page 950 of Tragedy and Hope. This is the book that we know Bill Clinton read. He believed it and went to graduation in 1968 and with this information. And we'll start with page 950. Dr. Quigley wrote, quote, there does exist and has existed for a generation. Now, let's just talk about that. I mean, a generation is about 40 years, so back to 1920 or so he's talking about. So a generation, there's been something. He called it an international Anglophile network, which operates, by the way, and then this is me now, the word Anglophile means primarily English. So he's saying that for a generation there's been an international Anglophile network operating to some extent in the way the radical right believes the Communist Act. Well, that's us. So he's talking about how we believe that this conspiracy operates like we believe the Communists operate. And then he goes on to say, Dr. Quigley, in fact, this network, which we may identify as the roundtable groups, has no aversion to cooperating with the Communists or any other group, and frequently does so. I know of the operations of this network because I studied it for 20 years, meaning back, now this is me again, now back to about 1940 or 1920 or something. Wait, 20 years, he said. Is that what it was? 20 years?
About 20 years.
So I pushed it back around 1946. So Dr. Quigley started studying this thing after World War II. But he went on to say he was permitted for 2 years in the early 1960s to examine its papers and secret records.
And Chris, this comes from page 950 of Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And so go right ahead, Ralph.
Okay. Now, the next thing is really something. Dr. Quigley admitted, quote, "I have no aversion to it or most of its instruments, but in general, my chief difference of opinion is that it wishes to remain unknown, and I believe its role in history is significant enough to be known," end quote.
And what he's really talking about is this secret roundtable group that he had been studying all of this time. You're right. Go ahead.
Now, Dr. Quigley goes on. I won't try to read the quotes, but he goes on to say this conspiracy already controls the economies of the world. He says that in his book, written in 1966. It already controls the world. It's not striving to do that. It's already complete. And we know. He talks about the way they control the world is through the central banks. And America has a central bank called the Private Reserve. People mistakenly call it the Federal Reserve, but it's not. It's the Private Reserve. It's privately owned. And because it's privately owned, like all the other central banks, these men can meet and plan our future. But it's not the entirety of this conspiracy, but it's enough for Dr. Quigley to convince they already control the world. Now, here's the question. If the world is controlled by a conspiracy, why would they allow foreign nations to develop atomic weapons that could be used to nuke the conspiracy? It doesn't make sense. Let me give you a question, Dr. Stan. Let's just presume that you are the president of a huge corporation, and you've got branch offices all over the United States, and you hear about the man in Cincinnati who's your branch manager. You hear that he hates you. He wants to take over and take your place. And he's threatened to kill you. And so what you want to do, Dr. Stan, of course, is to go to Cincinnati and give the man a gun to shoot you with. Isn't that what you'd want to do? Is that what we do? That's what we've done? The conspiracy controls Russia, but they allow Russia to have nuclear weapons to nuke the conspiracy with? Does that make sense?
Well, a lot of things in the world don't make sense, Ralph. Go ahead.
But think about it, Dr. Stan. This conspiracy controls Russia. We know that. They bought the Russian Revolution. This is all covered in the Unseen Hand. We know they already control Russia. If they control the Cincinnati branch manager and he threatens to kill you, you don't go to Cincinnati and give the man a gun to kill you with. This conspiracy is many things, but they're not stupid. Why would they give a branch manager in Russia the ability to nuke a meeting that this conspiracy would have, like the Bilderbergs or the CFR or something else? Why would they do that? It doesn't make sense. The branch manager in Cincinnati is going to be arrested for threatening to kill the corporate president. That's the first clue that this whole thing is a scam. Why would they give this Russian dictator or some general or anyone the ability to nuke the conspirators? Let me give you a good example.
And, of course, what we do know is, of course, they have transferred the technology to Russia to be able to merge their missiles and to China to be able to merge their missiles, and we've really provided them with the technology to create the weapons that they have. And I think Ralph's point is very valid. A lot of these things don't make sense. And the other thing is, if the Russians really have these terrible, frightening weapons, then why don't we have a defense force? We had a very effective anti-ballistic missile system back in the 70s. We disbanded it, and we've never built one since then. I always give the excuse one way or the other. I think we have six missiles up there in Alaska now. The Russians supposedly have 1,000 warheads. So we've got six missiles to take down 1,000 warheads? That doesn't make sense. So go ahead, Ralph. We'll be back in just a moment as you develop your ideas. A lot of things out there don't make sense. And, well, let's just hear more of what you have to say. Go right ahead, Ralph.
Okay, that's the first clue that there's something wrong here. Now, let me give you some concrete evidence. The American and European bankers financed the Russian Revolution. Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky were financed by American and European money. And after the war was over, the revolution was over, when they killed 40 million Russians. 40 million Russians died in the communist revolution between 1917 and 20 or 3 or something like that, maybe longer, but 40 million Russians died. And communism was the most brutal, sadistic, tyrannical government ever devised by man, and yet that government was allowed to stay in power. Well, of course, they had a revolution. Why didn't the Russian people replace it with another revolution? Well, the answer is, of course, they don't have any weapons, and that statement's true. Now, you might remember, Duckstein, you and I are old enough, I think, remember the revolutions that were occurring in Poland and Czechoslovakia in Hungary during the 60s. And those people were fighting Russian tanks with sticks and stones and Molotov cocktails. They had no weapons to resist. Therefore, that was a good example. They didn't have the same. They had the same thing in Russia. Nothing. They didn't have any weapons to fight back with. Oh, yes, they did. They had 15,000 nuclear weapons. Now, let's just presume for a moment that there's a Russian colonel who knows that communism, or general, let's make it a general. He's in charge of a whole squadron of missiles, let's say in Vladivostok. And he says, wait a minute, this system is terrible. It kills people. It destroys people. It's anti-human nature. Let's just say that he reads about a meeting of some 5,000 communists meeting at one time in Moscow, and he goes down in the basement and reprograms one missile and launches it with a nuclear warhead, and he kills those communists, and he takes over and says the game is over. What would the Russian people say about that? They would welcome it because he would become the greatest hero of all time. That system stinks, and the Russian people know that. I quote General, well, he's called a colonel, but it's equivalent of a general, Oleg Penkovsky, who says none of his friends who are communists like the system. They all hate it. Well, then why don't they do something about it? These guys are generals. And you say, wait a minute, one general cannot do this. Oh, that's not true. Well, there's too many computer checks, et cetera, for a Russian to take one missile and launch it against Moscow. Let's just go back, Duckstein. We know this. Young people in America with a computer and a high speed or something are breaking into the Department of Defense and, you know, causing havoc. They're creating, viruses to break into systems. And you tell me one general in Russia doesn't know how to reprogram one missile to break into the system? Notice, he doesn't need permission. He doesn't need an army. He doesn't need a revolution. He does it on his own. He's had it. And I'll give you one more better example. In my video, I show you a picture taken out of Soviet Life magazine in 1987 of 5,000 communists meeting with Premier Mikhail Gorbachev in one building at one time. Why weren't they nuked? You could take I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I've been told that you can take a 60 megaton bomb, and by controlling it, you can make it a 5 megaton so you don't destroy the whole city of Moscow, and you nuke them, and it's over. Communism would end.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Ralph is simply making the point that, you know, if the Russians really had all these nuclear weapons, why wouldn't there at least be one communist general who would be really hate the system? And I think most people over there do hate the system. It's brutal. There is no freedom, and we've had many of the Russian generals defect to the West. But why, Ralph makes the point, why wouldn't one of those Russian generals, get a nuclear weapon and simply blow up the whole of the Politburo? Sometimes you'll get as many as 5,000 communists being addressed by the leader of the communist movement, and it would be very easy for one communist general to use his power to mobilize one nuclear weapon and simply wipe out the whole corrupt system, this brutal system that's killed tens of millions of people. So Ralph just simply asked the question, if they really do have those weapons, and we're told sometimes that they aren't very well guarded, you know, that the Russians aren't very good at, as we are, guarding their weapons, why hasn't at least one of them been released, or some of the chemical or biological weapons? And well, but at least we're talking about nuclear weapons, so why hasn't one been released? Go ahead, Ralph.
Okay, now, let's pose the next question. There was a Russian scientist that came to Tucson, Arizona, where I live, and there was a notice in the newspaper. He was going to give a speech that night. He was an astronomer here because Tucson's one of the major sites for astronomy. They've got a mount with a dozen or so telescopes up on there. So he came, and he was going to give a speech. So I went. There was at the University of Arizona, and there were probably 100 people there. And so I always sit in the back of the auditorium back, and he was taking questions, and I stood up and said, Professor, or doctor, whatever it was, I'll call him professor. My name is Ralph Epperson. I'm a local writer and a researcher, and I am what we call here in America an anti-communist. And I have discovered the evidence that your system of communism is kept alive by American technology. And I said, and that means that Americans are making a profit on the slavery of the Russian economic system. I said, do you have any comment to make? And you're going to have to take my word for this. He had a microphone on, and he pointed towards me, and he said, I want you to know what this man is telling you is true. Here's a Russian admitting that their system is kept alive by American technology.
In fact, we actually have reproduced in our little pamphlet called The Capitalist Communist Alliance, or The Communist Capitalist Alliance, a speech made by Solzhenitsyn in 1975 to the United Auto Workers, where he said exactly that. And I hope all of our listeners will get that little pamphlet. It's four of our newsletters. Yes, Professor Sutton's message was, America has kept communism alive and functioning and provided with the technology and the funding to finance the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War and everything else the communists have done. And in essence, Solzhenitsyn said exactly the same thing. So what your Soviet expert was telling was exactly the truth. Yes, we have kept communism alive and well and financed it since its inception. So go right ahead, Ralph. Which had to verify your theory that if we were keeping him alive and financing him, we would not be giving him Soviet nuclear weapons as well. Go ahead.
Okay, now, let's take the next question. I was in the Dallas airport several years ago. I'll be honest, I don't remember when. It may have been 5-6 years ago. And one of America's well-known senators, I won't name him because I don't want to embarrass him, and I'm not even sure this happened, but as I'm walking from one airport terminal to another in Dallas, I heard on my right as I'm walking by, this gate number 47, and we're now boarding flight 1407 to Mazatlan, Mexico. And I said, oh, my goodness, I want to go to Mazatlan. I don't want to go to Topeka. So I stopped in the middle of the aisle, and I looked over to the right, and here are these lucky people getting on board the flight to Mazatlan. And in that line stood this senator. One of America's most famous senators. If I named him, everybody would know who I'm talking about. And he was standing in line by himself, and I said, my goodness, so he's going down there for a vacation. And I said, oh, he must have his wife, and I know what his wife looks like. She's been in the media, so she wasn't there. And I said, well, he's got his kids, he's going down there. No, he was by himself. In fact, he was pulling his own carry-on luggage with the wheels. And I said, oh, he's going down there with his staff for a confidential meeting. No, he was by himself. And I said, I'll bet she's going to a Bilderberg meeting, and we'll end for the break.
All right, fine. Of course, we're going to have to wait and find out who. Well, we're not going to find out who the senator was.
No, I don't want to tell you.
All right, fine. But at least the senator's on the way to Mazatlan. You've got about 30 seconds. What can you say in 30 seconds?
Well, okay, I'm saying the thought is that here's a man that is going to meet with some of the most powerful people, 150 of them, in one city at one time. Why were they never nuked by the Russians, who knew that these are the people that killed 40 million Russians?
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ralph Epperson, and Ralph is simply saying, well, why don't the Russians ever nuke the Bilderbergers? Certainly they're one of the most powerful organizations here in the Western world. Well, probably for the same reason that, having read the communist newspapers for the better part of almost 50 years, at least I've been reading for 44 years, I will tell you, the communists in their publications never attack the Bilderbergers. They never talk about the Council on Foreign Relations or the Trilateral Commission. Of course, they're always very critical of the military-industrial complex and the industrialists in America, but they never talk about the organization that coordinates the whole thing here in the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers. We have to ask ourselves why. Why you mean to tell me that communist America don't know about America's invisible government, this Anglo-American establishment that Ralph talks about? Go ahead with your story there.
So that's my question. Why? Now, and you're right as well, New York City has got the Council on Foreign Relations. That's another place where they could nuke a couple of thousand of these people that planned the Russian Revolution, financed it, and then sat back and made the profits off the slavery of those people. Why hasn't one Russian general ever nuked the Bilderberg meeting or the Council on Foreign Relations at one time to kill all these people? It doesn't make sense. If they've got 15,000 nukes, it only takes one general. You don't need a revolution. You don't need an army. You don't need a permission of Gorbachev or anyone else. You just do it. And it's never happened. So the question is, this senator was going, let's presume he's going to a Bilderberg meeting in Mazatlan. That's where these people meet. Periodically they meet in secret places, off the beaten path, where not many people would even recognize them or know who they are. And so he does not fear getting nuked. Wait a minute. Here's an American senator who's a conspirator who's not afraid of getting nuked. A Russian could read about it. He could go down there. He might not come home to his beautiful bride. That doesn't make sense. They're going to these meetings, and they're meeting at the CFR meeting, and they're not afraid of getting nuked. I would be. I later found out there was no meeting in Mazatlan at that time, so I'm convinced that this senator was going down there for a vacation, I guess. But the point is that there's been no meeting of these wealthy conspirators out to keep communism alive from Russia for over 60 years, and I want to know why. Why? Why? Why has there been no nuking of either the communists or the capitalists that are keeping communism alive? I'm telling you, the Russian people hate the system, and they have no way to resist except nuclear weapons.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Ralph here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, of course, Ralph Epperson. And Ralph is asking a lot of very, very provocative questions. And the biggest question, I think, is why, you know, if suddenly they hold regular meetings of these very powerful people, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, why have the Russians never attacked those? They could send a missile in, they could certainly blow up all the leaders of the industrialized world, and then, of course, everything would go into chaos, and they could move in. And Ralph simply asked why nobody has ever nuked one of these meetings of this elite who rule the Western world. So, but before we go on, Ralph, why don't you go ahead and get your telephone number out, your website, and let people know how they get in touch with you.
Okay, you're very kind, Dr. Stan. I would especially encourage someone out there, anyone, or maybe everybody who knows anything at all about this from your experience, please call me. Let's talk. I need your personal testimony about what you know about this. If you've got something to add to my research, please call me. I have an 800 number, which means I pay for the call. It's a toll-free. As I said, I don't have any top secret sources, and you watch my DVD, you'll see that I'm using just sources that you could find, the New York Times and the U.S. News and the books written by Penkovsky and Major Jordan and all sorts of people. They're all easy. American material. Well, and some foreign. Call me at 800-422-3888. Now, it's going to be 10 o'clock when we get finished, so call me tomorrow. This is my home and business. Call me. Okay, now, if you want to go to my website, it's ralph-epperson.com. ralph-epperson.com, and you can go there. If you want to watch the video on your own, you can go to to Google and then find the video, type, you know, click on that. It opens up a little search box where you type in no nukes but U.S. nukes and click on that, and you'll watch the first part. It starts automatically. Now, understand, there's a second part, and please promise me you'll give me 3 hours and watch this whole thing, and you'll see the enormity of the scam this whole thing is. It's a scam. Okay. Now, no nuke. In fact, let's ask the next question. How many nuclear bombs have been exploded in anger since 1945? How many? Dr. Stan, what do you think?
Remember that we've done a lot of testing of them, but you're talking about being used against other countries.
Yes.
We said we've done extensive testing in the South Pacific and certainly in the Nevada Desert, but as far as utilized against other countries, up until recently, none have been used. And nobody in the other countries that have the weapons have not used them either. But the thing that's always intrigued me is why have our leaders, whether they be Democrat or Republican, always refuse to deploy any sort of defense against nuclear weapons, so that why would we leave this nation undefended if the Russians really do have these terrible weapons that they could destroy us with? So go right ahead.
In fact, that's one of the great questions. Ted Kennedy has always voted against any nuclear shield, any Star Wars or anything like that. And that means that Ted Kennedy doesn't, for some reason, doesn't fear getting nuked at Chappaquiddick. Why? I don't understand. Why wouldn't he want to build it so he could go there and go yachting and enjoy his life without getting nuked? Why? Because I think Teddy Kennedy and all of our senators know this. I think they know it's a scam and that they don't have to worry about Russia or any other nation nuking them because they know they don't have any nukes. Now, I want to use one more. Okay, are we ready? Let's go for the next one. That's just another little bit of the evidence that I'm right. I want to go back to 1980, I think it was 89, 80, I forgot now, it's in my video the exact date. But Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan signed the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, called the INF Treaty. And they signed it, they brought it back to the Senate, and it was ratified. And I want you to know, in the video, I actually show you the treaty. I got a copy and read it. Now, I was a classmate of Senator Dennis DeConcini. Maybe you don't remember him, but he was our senator from Arizona for like 18 years, I think 3 terms. And I went to school with Dennis for a long time. I didn't know him very well, but well enough to know, and he recognized me. I went to one of his meetings. He had a public meeting. We could invite questions from the floor. I said, Dennis, good to see you. He was very cordial. I said, good to see you, Dennis. Did you vote for the INF Treaty? He said, oh, yes. I said, why, Dennis? He said, well, I believe it's important that we try to protect, reduce our nuclear threat by doing that. I said, Dennis, did you read it? He said, no. I said, well, I don't understand, Dennis. I elected you to read the treaty, and so you knew what it was, and you voted, you know, what you considered to be right. He said, no, I didn't read it. I said, well, why did you vote for it? He said, well, I trusted Ronald Reagan. I said, wait a minute, Ronald Reagan's a Republican. You're a Democrat. You shouldn't have done that, Dennis. You should have read it. So I did, and I said, okay, Dennis, I have a copy of it in my hands. I'm going to read you two sentences and show you why you should not have voted for the INF Treaty. Now, you're going to have to take my word for it, Dr. Stan, and your listeners, but in my video, I actually show you the piece of paper that's got these words on it. The front of the INF Treaty says they're going to eliminate, and I want to emphasize that word, eliminate the intermediate nuclear forces of both Russia and the United States. Eliminate. I know what that word means, and you know what it means, and Reagan knew what it means, and it's a word means we're going to destroy, completely obliterate, no more have them in existence. And then we're going to read page 95 or 85, something like that, and I show you the page in my DVD, and we're going to read it, and I'm going to do it from memory. It says, those missiles subject to destruction, there's the word destruction, under the terms of this treaty, shall be subject to external visual observation only. External visual observation only. Only. That means, can we kick it? Can we look inside? Can we drop acid on it to see if it's metal? Can we cut it open? Can we hit it with a hammer? Can we do anything else? No. External, visual, observation only. Now, in my video, I show you example after example after example prior to the signing of this treaty that our government knew that Russia builds at least some phony missiles. In fact, Russia admitted they had at least 20% of their missiles were fake. Fake. They were made out of plastic or concrete or something else. They admitted that, and once again, it's not top secret. It was in my local newspaper. That means that Reagan knew that part of their missile forces were fake. James All the World's Aircraft, which is the number one leading authority on armaments around the world, even they admit that Russia has a penchant for building fake missiles. So the one thing you want to do if you want to eliminate real missiles is you make certain that our verifiers can make certain the missile being destroyed is real. And Reagan signed a treaty that doesn't give us the ability to do that. Why? What sane man would sign a treaty like that? He and Gorbachev signed it. The Senate ratified it. Why would they agree to a provision in the treaty that does not give us the ability to verify the missiles being destroyed is real? I can't answer that question. Unless Russia doesn't have any real missiles at all. That's what makes sense. Now let's finish. To reduce the nuclear threat, let's say that Russia does have 15,000 missiles, warheads. And we're going to destroy, eliminate the threat. That means we got to reduce at least thousands of these warheads. Now, if you don't destroy the warhead, you could take it off of missile A and destroy that, and then put it on missile B. How does that eliminate the nuclear, or even reduce the nuclear threat? So I read on page 172, both nations signatory to the treaty are permitted to remove the warhead without verification because the warheads are small and verification would be very, very difficult. Huh? What? How does that eliminate warheads? Huh? What type of man would sign a treaty like that? What type of Senate would confirm and vote for such a treaty? That doesn't eliminate one, we don't even know if it eliminates one valid real missile, and certainly does not reduce the nuclear threat by eliminating the warhead. And I show you the words from the treaty itself in my documentary. What in God's name are we doing? Now, I have to admit, the next statement I'm about to make is certainly controversial, but I believe Reagan and Gorbachev both knew that Russia doesn't have any nuclear weapons for us to verify the elimination of. What else makes sense? If we're going to eliminate warheads, we eliminate warheads. No, we don't. They can remove them without verification. That's the INF treaty. Now, that is only one of the very many things that I found that's very disturbing about this whole scam. Now, let's talk about North Korea. Oh, no, wait a minute, Ralph. Come on. We know that North Korea just exploded a nuclear bomb. We know it because it happened in 2006. They admitted they did it. Okay, let's now use, once again, non-confidential sources. I've got it in newspapers. That's all I know. The newspaper said that North Korea admitted before they exploded it that there would be no radioactivity to measure. Huh? Wait a minute, I thought nuclear bombs gave off nuclear radiation. But North Korea admitted that it wouldn't be any for us to use as a way to verify the attack, the explosion was nuclear. Now, there's an article I show you in my local newspaper that says that our government admitted that they tested it and there was no radioactivity. And it also, I heard a radio report that four Australian labs, that's what they said on the radio, some news report, that they four separate labs in Australia tried to verify that the attack, the bomb was nuclear, and they found no radioactivity. Now, the article went on to say that our intelligence experts concluded that they were doing this to gain concessions from the West. And sure enough, just a matter of a week ago, my local newspaper, once again, my confidential source, said that America gave them concessions. Does that mean we gave them money? And some sort of yes. In other words, it worked. It worked. They used a fraudulent explosion to gain concessions, and our government gave them concessions when we knew the attack, the explosion, was a fraud.
You know, one of the things that really would tend to sort of verify what you were saying is because they say that it takes about 50,000 centrifuges to manufacture sufficient plutonium or uranium for a nuclear bomb. The Iranians at the present time are said to have 3,000 centrifuges working. But I remember not too long ago reading an article that said that the North Koreans had 200 centrifuges, and they were going to shut those down as a sign of good faith that they were no longer going to be working to develop a nuclear weapon. And I said to myself, 200 centrifuges? Iranians, 3,000? Takes 50,000 to be able to make enough the uranium for a bomb. How could the North Koreans, who can't even feed their own people, the people are starving to death, they have a very hard time producing much of anything, any technology they have comes from communist China or from America, how were they possibly able to build a nuclear bomb when most countries in the world, other countries couldn't build a nuclear bomb, but we're supposed to believe that North Korea can, using their 200 centrifuges. And I had a very uneasy feeling, just as you do, Ralph, that what we're being told somehow just is not true. But go right ahead.
Now, wait a minute, Ralph. Wait a minute. We know from Major Jordan's diaries that America gave Russia one atomic bomb back in 1942, 43, or 44, sometime in that period. We sent them half of our uranium supply. We sent them all of the component parts they needed to build one atomic bomb for Major Jordan's diaries. Major Jordan was in charge of our Lend-Lease program in Great Falls, Montana, where he supervised the loading of these airplanes that were landing there to be filled with whatever the Russians and America we were going to give them to fight the Germans in World War II. So, and Major Jordan was curious. He opened up boxes. He actually shows you copies of the bills of lading in his book. Oh, come on, it's just one man's opinion. Now, let me tell you this, Dr. Stan. We have a second man's opinion. Someone else verified that. And this book is not very well known. In fact, I haven't found anyone else that's even heard of it. It's called A Family Matter, written by James Roosevelt, the son of Franklin Roosevelt. And in his book, he says that he was a major in the Army during World War II, and he got a call from Daddy, the Commander-in-Chief, who said, I want you, and I can trust you because you're my son, I can trust you, I want you to send half of our uranium supply and all that materials from the Manhattan Project to Russia. James Roosevelt wrote that book, yes, and I would urge, if someone doesn't believe me, get a copy and read it. A Family Matter by James Roosevelt confirms Major Jordan's book. So the two books confirm that we gave Russia one atomic bomb. Now, oh, no, wait a minute, Ralph. Everybody knows that we exploded. The Russians exploded that bomb in 1943. No. I went back and read the reports from President Truman, who said that he could find no evidence that the Russians did explode the atomic bomb. He said, I don't think they've got one. So apparently Truman didn't know about James Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt because he denied that they did explode. Now, even if they did have one, do they have others? In fact, even if France, they claim that France has detonated nuclear weapons. Okay, let's say that they did. I can't prove it one way or the other. I don't know. But let's say they did. How does that translate into having nuclear missiles, I mean missiles capable of carrying a nuclear bomb, and also the bomb itself from one explosion. It doesn't mean diddly squat. I could tell you, let me give you one more thing to think about. There's a book written by Sun Tzu called The Art of War, written in 500 B.C. If you want to, we'll cover that.
Well, of course, what Sun Tzu says, when you are weak, appear to be strong. When you're strong, appear to be weak. And, of course, to fight and conquer in all of your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence consists of breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. And, of course, what you want to do is convince them that you are so powerful they can't hold out against you. And that's what the Russians are doing. You know, they have all these nuclear weapons, or do they? We'll be back here. Well, it's been fascinating talking to Ralph Epperson, and maybe we'll get him back again some evening to get the other 2 hours of the story. Well, Ralph, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, well, let me just say one thing about Sun Tzu. In his book, he says that the art of war is to practice deceit. Practice deceit. And I'm going to show you example after example after example after example till you're almost, it's obnoxious, of deceit practice on the people of the world about this whole subject. And you're going to see that this whole thing is a scam, it's a fraud and a hoax, and it's cost us billions of dollars, and the Russians as well, and in time and wasted effort and energy and materials, everything else, to build a in the Russian case, it's almost non-existent. And in the American case, it's been a lot of money spent on nothing. Lyndon Johnson himself admitted back in the, probably 1964 or 5, something like that, he said, after he got started seeing the space satellite pictures, "We are harboring fears we don't need to harbor." Lyndon Johnson told us that in 1964 or 65. Now, I ask you this, in the video I say this. Remember that Lyndon Johnson, after he learned the truth about this whole scam, remember he went on national television and told the American people it's going to stop, the fraud is going to stop, the Russians don't have all this technology? No, Lyndon Johnson never went on TV, even though he admitted it was a scam. Why? Why? Because too many people make profit on this enormous scam.
Well, now, where did he say it was all a scam? Where can we get that documentation?
It's in a book, and it's quoted in the book, and I show you the title of the book and who wrote it, even talk about the author. It's written by Jeffrey Rickelson. And when you go on the Internet, this guy's a major writer on this kind of subject. So I'm telling you, this thing is a scam, and Lyndon Johnson admitted it. He's the only one that I know that's ever done it directly, although Ronald Reagan did it indirectly when he signed the INF Treaty. And that's only a beginning of the evidence I found. Please, this is so important. I urge you all to watch that DVD. Go on the Internet. If you don't have it, call me. I'll send you one free. I want to get this thing to become something we're all talking about. We've got to understand this whole thing is a scam. Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Neither did North Korea have one. Russia doesn't have any. France doesn't have them. Israel doesn't have them. None. There are none. No. And I've got 3 hours of evidence to show you. We've only talked about it for a little less than an hour.
All right, fine. Well, it's been a fascinating hour, Ralph. And I want you to know how much I appreciate your coming on and sharing it with us. You've raised a number of very, very significant points. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you've enjoyed our program with Ralph Epperson. Ralph, give your telephone number out one more time.
Thank you. 800-422-3888, Tucson, Arizona. We're in the Pacific time zone, so keep it in mind. Don't call tonight, but call during the day or even on the weekend, even evenings. Keep in touch. Let's talk.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, Ralph's been a friend of mine for many, many years. We always enjoy spending time with him, and I put this information forward. I'd like to know what you think, and perhaps we can explore that some evening. But right now, certainly, we want to mention that we do carry Ralph's books, The Unseen Hand, The New World Order, and Masonry, the Conspiracy Against Christianity. Masonry, the Conspiracy Against Christianity. All three books are available if you'd like to learn more. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience would like to get more information on Masonry. And, of course, that Ralph is really one of the leading experts on that. We carry the book Unholy Alliance by James Wardner, Behind the Lodge Door by Paul Fisher, and these go into the influence of Masonry at the highest levels of our government. If you'd like to see it in dramatic form on DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone, two award-winning DVDs that will put things into their perspective for you. Certainly my talk on The Brotherhood of Darkness, or the book by that title, gives you the background of the Masonic influence in our nation, in our Supreme Court, which they controlled from 1941 to 1971, and it was during that time they took God and prayer out of our schools, because, you see, the Masons worship a different God. They don't worship the God of the Bible. They worship the great architect of the universe, who is the other God. And this is why you, of course, need to get our information on Masonry, because they do worship a different God. And that's why, of course, you certainly should hear my talk on The Forbidden Secret. It comes with a syllabus. You need to understand we're in a spiritual battle, and there are literally millions of people out there who worship a different God, and their goal is the destruction of America, the destruction of Christianity, and the establishment of a one-world government with a new world leader. If you have not yet read our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, you need to get them. There are three of them, and they're really very inexpensive. That's The Occult Hierarchy, and it will give you insight into who these people are. We take their magazines. We read their publications. We know what this is about. And what it is about is the destruction of Christianity. And so this is why we hope many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters. You can watch many of our DVDs, which are our videos, which are posted there in the audio video section. And then, of course, encourage others to listen to our programs. Now, you can hear our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet. We're on three separate networks. We're on the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network, and the Radio Liberty Network, and certainly at least 3 hours a day are posted and archived at RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our television, Telstar 5, a feed either on my website or on Telstar 5 satellite 9 hours a day. You won't get much accomplished, but you'll learn a lot. We do want you to remember our all-day-long seminar on the 28th of October. That's a Sunday, 28th of October, and we do hope you can come. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We've got a great lineup of guests coming in that'll be speaking, and it'll be a great time by all. So, again, our telephone number, you're going to have a reservation, 1-800-544-8927. Please encourage others to come, because you'll meet people from across the nation. You'll have an opportunity to get the material you need. You'll learn about, certainly, how to prepare for disasters. We'll have our material there on going into the background of, certainly, of civil defense and sheltering in place. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.